Blog Talk Radio.
And Don Show. I'm Don Allen, and broadcasting live from Seattle is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how's everything going out there on the West Coast? Mr. Edwards? Hello, Mr. Edwards.
You got problems.
Okay,
but,
there we go.
All right.
Okay. So, you're broadcasting live from the West Coast. We had someone to call in on the other line, Mr. Edwards, and you dropped out for a minute, and now we're all back. Everything's fine.
Oh, okay.
We have a special
guest
tonight.
Yeah, you asked the question how things are out here on the West Coast, like any place else, particularly with regards to problems in the so-called urban centers, and that's something that is being looked at. But actually, we are here with a delegation that is actually being headed by Fifth Ward Councilman Blong Yang and other members of security forces, if you will. And so a series of meetings, discussions, and et cetera that are consistent with the agreement between the MPD and the Department of Justice. And so Chief Janae Harto is continuing to carry out her mandate and the request for assistance that she made. Been a lot of meetings today with the Seattle Police Department, King County authorities, and et cetera. So additional insight
recording
hopefully will
stopped.
Help.
Press R, the 7 key, to review your message. D, the 3 key, to discard your message.
Wow, what is that? What kind of conversations are we getting, gentlemen?
That's probably the NSA trying to peek in, Mr. Edwards. So
gotta
they're
be,
gone,
man.
Now.
You know,
yeah. So, I was reading
that clearly is what that had sounded like. Yeah. Well, we understand we have a very important guest with us this evening, Don. You know, let's bring Edward on.
Yeah, we're happy to be joined tonight by Executive Director of formerly the Council of Black Minnesotans, now the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, the Executive Director, Mr. Edward McDonald. Mr. McDonald, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don, Mr. Allen, thank you very much for having me, and it's always great to be in the company of Mr. Edwards, longtime mentor, friend, and someone that I have admired and a lot of respect for, so I'm hoping to enjoy myself here with you two tough guys and hopefully spend some time enlightening the community.
I appreciate having you, Mr. McDonald. Mr. Allen, go ahead. I know you've had conversations with Mr. McDonald today in the pre-preparation meeting, so go right ahead. Let's get it on.
Well, Mr. Harris, I put up, and Mr. McDonald, I put up a post today that says Minnesota's black issues were solved in 2015, but they were ignored. We have the wealth gap, education gap, the health gap, and the employment gap. And we're just all these gaps, and we're trying to wonder how this happened on our watch. And so I was reviewing, Mr. Edwards, the Council on Black Minnesota's legislative report, the final 2015, and all the things that they submitted, you know, to be heard as a bill, which didn't get heard, and just some other things. And I just thought it's really important that we have Mr. Ed McDonald on to kind of explain the turn of events from this and some other things concerning this Black Council and our reputation, our representation. Excuse me, Mr. McDonald, what's happening? What is the state of that final report? Is anybody moving on it, or are we just kind of sitting static at this point?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the struggle continues, and it's always been that way. And, you know, for us as African Heritage people, you know, we continue to live in an environment where movements produce the changes that we need, and we make progress. We have a lot to be proud of. And I think Mr. Edwards would be the first one to tell me that you always want to lead with letting people know how far we've come. You know, when the first African Heritage people arrived here in Minnesota, they came here pretty much with nothing. But we have very, very strong cultural diversity that helps make Minnesota a very exciting place. We now enjoy roughly about $4 billion in consumer spending power. We operate over 15,000 business enterprises that generate roughly about $1 billion in sales. We employ nearly 25,000 people and generate payroll of about $250 million. We pay about $750 million in taxes, local and state, here in Minnesota. And we have been able to make some progress with increasing exports to the continent of Africa to the tune of about $200 million. So, you know, starting with that, you know, and we like to lead with showing the assets of our community and our strong contribution to the state. And there is just this minimum requirement that those contributions should yield the opportunity for us to participate in social political deliberations, bring ideas to the table to be discussed and hopefully acted on that help us grow those assets to continue to make positive contributions to, you know, the fine state of Minnesota. So things were not as positive as we would like them to be last year after, you know, conducting a legacy tour throughout the state, meeting with our community and all of the large population centers around the state. We're able to work with them through quantitative methods to discern what were the major issues affecting our community and then work with them to draft legislative proposals to bring forth to the legislature and then engage them in the legislative process to promote those proposals. We led with one of our longstanding historical focuses, which has come with the origination of the council, and that is to take a look at the administrative application of civil rights and equal opportunity laws. And as you both know, here in Minnesota, that's called human rights laws. That extraordinary authority withstanding was bestowed upon the Council on Black Minnesotans back in 1980 when it was formed to ensure that the African Heritage community fully benefited from the social, political, and economic resources of the state of Minnesota. Our analysis that we reported to the state basically found noncompliance with the administrative application of those laws. We partnered with the NAACP to request that our state leaders conduct an audit, learn how those important laws that, you know, have built the legacies of people like Hubert Humphrey and Walter Mondale, Wendell Anderson, Governor LeBander, Nellie Stone Johnson, Roy Wilkins, could be deficient at this time. The deficiencies that we found was that for the past 20 years, the state of Minnesota had not appropriated a net increase in funding to our human rights department. 1994, we had 93 employees in that department. Today, we currently have 40. In 1994, it would take less than 6 months to resolve a complaint that would come into that department. Today, it takes nearly 4 years for a complaint to be resolved. So the complaint-based system that we have to ensure equal access and opportunity in the marketplace is extremely deficient as it relates to human rights. That's an insult to the iconic figures that built their career off of it. The other thing I want to say real quick, and then I'll...
Oh, no, take your time. We've got plenty of time. We're on for an hour and a half tonight. Correct, Mr. Allen?
We are correct. You are correct. Yes,
that's right. So take your time, Mr. McDonald, because this is a reflection and discussion of significant importance. So go right ahead, sir.
As it relates to contract procurement, and I know you gentlemen know this because you've been actively engaged with the appropriations the state made to the Viking Stadium, which is a huge investment. And but overall, the state spends roughly about $3 billion in contract procurement over the biennium, which is 2 years. And we're about to embark upon a bonding year next year, which would appropriate somewhere around about $1 billion that will be spent to, you know, build the infrastructure, new campus buildings, pay for a plethora of professional services that the state requires, as well as purchasing goods and services. Our community did not fare well there, and our contract procurement system is broken, even though we have probably one of the most progressive ones in the country. And what makes it progressive is that in 1998, and I know that Mr. Edwards and some of our elders really fought for this provision in the procurement system for the state of Minnesota. And what they've done, they've empowered the commissioner of Department of Administration and oversee procurement to be able to correct a disparity instantaneously when it's detected. 1998.
Could you repeat that again? Mr. McDonald, that statement again. That needs to be heard by the world, if you will. They were provided with what enforcement title?
The ability under Minnesota Statute 16C, I believe it's Subdivision 5, the extraordinary power to correct disparities instantaneously when they're detected. Or if an act of discrimination occurred, they could intervene and take corrective action immediately in our contract procurement system.
Well, let me just cut in at this particular point and indicate for the purposes of our listening audience, both domestically and internationally. Obviously, you will be addressing the legal and statutory actions that have been taken by the appropriate heads with that authority and power, starting with the Human Rights Department under Kevin Lindsay. So I know you're going to tell us that a number of what we also work for, and I appreciate your recollection as a younger man of the effort that was mounted by many of us, and so many have passed on to the other side. So a number of commissioners' complaints were filed during 2015. Is that what you're getting ready to tell us?
Well, quite a few have been filed. The unfortunate thing is that many of them are not being resolved in a timely manner, and it is it is causing quite a bit of turmoil within the Human Rights Department. It's my understanding that they are, in fact, undergoing a restructuring right now. But let me finish up on this contract procurement piece, because I think this is important for folks.
Mm-hmm.
That power that was provided to the commissioner has never been exercised in the 16 years that it's existed. So no immediate corrective action on disparities.
Now, you say commissioner, which commissioner are you? Are you talking about the commissioner of administration?
Yes.
Or the commissioner of the Human Rights Department? Which commissioner?
This is the Department of Administration commissioner. Human Rights monitors the affirmative action requirements for contractors that are awarded contracts. So that is how they utilize subcontractors, as well as protected class subcontractors, as well as the workforce of those contractors and the diversification of that workforce. And so they have an obligation, both through the disbursement of federal dollars as well as state dollars, to comply with our affirmative action requirements for any contract over $100,000. And that then falls in the lap of our Human Rights Department to monitor that. So like on the Viking Stadium, we know who the two prime contractors on that are. And then there's a lot of subcontractors. That should be diversified to meet various benchmarks that get established on projects like that. And then the workforce numbers for each of those subcontractors is then monitored to ensure that there is compliance with our affirmative action requirements for protected class people. And we are protected class people. The last one is the Affirmative Action Act itself, which also applied to contracting over $100,000, as well as the employment of protected class people within state operations. The state of Minnesota is the largest employer, some 40,000 employees. And historically, it has always been underutilized our community within all job categories. And what we discovered there was that in 2012 through 2014, no State Department had a conforming affirmative action plan. Now, I bring this all up, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, while I used to run around with you and Mr. Little and Mr. Wilson and Davis and Lurleen Baker and Ellie Stone Johnson, I used to often hear about this treaty our ancestors negotiated with this country, called the Civil Rights Act of 64. Mm-hmm. And they used to say in close quarters, don't you ever forget the treaty that we negotiated to ensure fair play in the marketplace. We're not asking for any special consideration. As long as we're making contributions to the coffers of government, we should expect at a minimum that it's fair for us to compete for opportunities within our government. And that's, you know, essentially what that treaty is all about. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to explain here is that there are huge deficiencies in the administrative application of those equal access and opportunity laws within the state of Minnesota. That is perpetuating in the marketplace the disparities that we are experiencing today. If the state takes corrective action on Minnesota Statute 3638, which is our human rights statute, our Contract Procurement Act, which is 16C, and our Affirmative Action Act, which is 43A, and got that right, we would eradicate disparities in Minnesota.
We are listening at this particular time to Mr. Edward McDonald, the director, and I will still call the organization the Council on Black Minnesotans, founded in 1980 through the efforts of African-American leadership of that particular day to bring all parties to the table of success, if you will. And so Mr. McDonald has agreed to join us tonight on the Don and Ron program. My co-host and associate, Mr. Allen, is also in studio. So I have to ask a couple of questions, Mr. McDonald, out of fairness and balance, because over the last couple of years, Mr. Allen and myself on this program have been accused of crying wolf, creating problems, stirring the manure, if you will, being about nothing but a bunch of BS. And yet, just in the last month, documentation, reports, and studies starting with the United States Department of the Census, which is the federal government. So, you know, if boss says that Negroes are in trouble, and there is a problem, I guess we can all now embrace that as factual. Now, when people like Mr. McDonald, Mr. Lawrence, and we truly talked about that, joining the legacy, that's an interesting reflection in the development and the ultimate passing of, and I like the way Mr. McDonald did that, Mr. Allen, a treaty, if you will, a document of understanding and commitment by people such as the ones previously named by Mr. McDonald, going back as far as, I mean, Nellie Stone Johnson, Cecil Newman, Frank Alsop, Dr. Thomas Johnson, and even then back beyond that to Roy Wilkins, and et cetera. I was just stunned when I saw the statistical data that it indicates just in 1 year's time that we have lost, black Minnesotans, have lost basically 14% of our economic slash earning base, if you will, which is kind of hard to do at a time when we're being told that there is absolute prosperity for all groups, except the African Americans. I mean, you have Latinos, Hispanics, if you will, you have Asians, you have the Somalis, even though they are supposed to be a part of the black cultural group, but they're talking in terms of Somalis are doing well, and etc. And yet the homegrown, that's us, have seen a terrible tumble into the deep caverns of economic despair and etc. So I'm assuming, Mr. McDonald, that at some point you're going to indicate to us that after filing the legal action, which we've talked about at least three times on this program with Mr. Lawrence before he was not reappointed by the governor. I assume you're getting ready to tell me, because you did mention the NAACP. They and their attorneys have joined with the Council on Black Minnesotans and yourself and have filed amicus briefs in support of your position. Is that correct?
We have filed for judicial review of a restructuring legislation that was passed this legislative session.
My question was that I assume that these other powerful civil rights organizations have filed what we used to do in the old days, and that they have filed amicus briefs in support of the contentions and issues that you have brought to the attention of the courts. Am I correct? Did I miss the press conference and the announcements of support? If they have not, which they have not, can you give me and our listening audience a kind of an understanding on why there has not been an outcry, an outrage, as it pertains to some of the latest data? Is there something going on that we need to know about?
No, not at all. We still have a very positive working relationship with the State Conference and ACP. And we do have approval, they do have, I should say, approval from National to move forward with supporting our efforts. We do believe that support will be forthcoming. I know that they, a month or so ago, was out at their national conference and getting
in
that all squared away.
Yeah, yeah. Philadelphia.
And,
okay.
And I have talked to the president,
State Conference president in Rochester.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. They wanted to have a courtesy meeting with the governor regarding these matters.
Mm-hmm.
To line up his support as well as some legislative leaders. They did not get the meeting, I believe, with the legislative leaders, but did meet with the governor. The governor agreed with them that he would like to voluntarily coordinate an audit of the administrative application of the laws that are germane to contract procurement and affirmative action within state government operations and contracting.
So now that's called in some quarters, Mr. McDonald, a good faith effort, okay? By the way, I have to ask these questions. Mr. Allen and myself must do this as very aggressive commentators and examiners. Who has the NAACP State Conference, solicited as their legal representative, or have representatives, including general counsel for the NAACP, arrived here in the state of Minnesota? Do you know?
It's a new person that's working with National Legal. I can't think of her name, but she does have some some history, I believe, here in Minnesota and with one of the state conference, with one of the state conference leaders at one of the historical black colleges. And so they were very excited about that as somebody who's familiar with the terrain.
That was a month ago, right? You were saying that a month ago they indicated some movement. So what can we look forward to? What can we look forward to from these groups that are now positioning themselves to support the lawsuit, legal action initiated by the Council on Black Minnesotans? I mean, kind of enlighten us. What will be happening?
Well, a couple things. I mean, and the matter that we're bringing forward is a very serious one because it's an affront to the state constitution. We believe that the way the restructuring legislation, as they call it, that now creates the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage is written. In fact, trued upon the Article 3, Section 1 of the state constitution, which is the separation of powers. And essentially, that intrusion falls in a couple areas. One, governors appointees, which are voting members, and the legislators who historically have been non-voting members are now voting members. And what the legislation does is give three of the four voting members of the legislature the authority to remove anybody from the board without cause. And that is the executive branch reaching into, that is the legislative branch reaching into the executive branch to manage how the executive branch carry out its duties. But under Article 3, Section 1 of the state, division of powers is what it's called, it clearly states that the power of government shall be divided into three distinct departments, the legislative, executive, and judicial. And it says no person or persons belonging to or constituting one of these departments shall exercise any powers properly belonging. So that's one area. The other area is that the executive director will be hired by, and I have to reapply for my job, and whoever gets the job will serve at the pleasure of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which is a joint caucus of the Senate and House, but work out of the executive branch. So essentially, the legislature is hiring an employee for the governor's office.
Now, that process of joint powers within the legislature, both the House and the Senate, representing the two parties, this is the same, Mr. Allen, it is the same approach and statutory presence that we have for the Viking Stadium, where you have, as Mr. McDonald and myself and you, Mr. Allen, know, where a special created by the legislature under the legislative house file, which created everything that pertains to the Viking Stadium, that in the course of the management and oversight of the Sports Facility Authority, headed by Michelle Kelm Haglund, the granddaughter of one of the legendary Democrats, one of the co-founders, along with Nellie Stone Johnson, an African-American woman and icon, founding what is now the DFL, Democratic Farmer Labor Party. So that same situation, in fact, our good friend, State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, is the co-chair of that legislative commission overseeing the implementation of compliance by the Sports Facility Authority and all doing business as contractors and subcontractors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So let me ask this question, Ms. McDonald. We don't certainly want to put you on the spot. We know that it's a delicate situation. Negotiations and coalitions are delicate under any circumstances, particularly if it deals with the rights and, quote-unquote, the survival of the sons and daughters of the African. So your attorney, we asked you this question last time you were with us. Your attorney is the Attorney General of the State of Minnesota, Ms. Lori Swanson. Is that correct? Is she representing your legal portfolio?
No. We went outside and hired a private attorney. Michael Fundingala is heading up our legal action that is presenting a, well, not a challenge for us, because we feel like once you allow for these two branches to change the status quo of the Constitution without the consent of the people, you're opening up a can of worms that we may not be able to retreat from. The Bill of Rights are in that Constitution, and the process for amending the Constitution is also there. And this could be one of those pathways to basically hoodwink us into believing that a judicial review is not necessary in this matter. But when you start talking about protected class people, and you're talking about the Bill of Rights, and you're talking about how the Constitution gets amended, that's serious stuff. So we, even though the Attorney General's office did say that they hold rights under Minnesota Statute 8.06 to represent us, they also said that they would not represent us, and they would not work with us to gain outside private counsel to do it. But as responsible public officials, we have an obligation under state law and under the Constitution that when we feel that someone has intruded upon the laws of the state or the Constitution of the state, that we need to inform the authorities.
In fact, the absence of you doing that, Mr. McDonald, would be an act of malfeasance in office, and that is justifiable grounds under the Constitution and under the procedural rules to remove you post haste, if you will. Right, Mr. Allen?
Absolutely, if you're asking me. So I'm very.
I'm asking you, but I'm also getting absolutely concurrence. And the reason is because a couple of months ago we had the state treasurer who brought forward some situations and circumstances in which she was being stripped of her power illegally and unconstitutionally because of some difficulties with regards to what she had uncovered. Am I correct, Mr. Allen? You remember that,
yes,
we still have on file that broadcast and our interview with her. And so I'm a little confused.
Well, yeah, I mean, something's amiss here, but, you know, the process itself is that I should say this, that the, I'm not sure if the author and co-author of this bill, which I believe was on your show back a while ago, I remember, was Representative Lange and
Columbia Heights, Democrat of Columbia Heights, yes.
Yes.
Senator Pappas and some others, yes.
Yes. I'm not sure if they really understood the intended consequences of this, but, it was the GOP-led House that gave them the pathway to pass this, and then it was the Democrats on the Senate side that basically killed the bill, but then in conference committee, I think, like a lot of things did this last session in the cloak of darkness, the wee hours of the morning, it emerged and even surprised us, and quickly, the great leadership of our board, Council on Black Minnesotans, sat down and did their due diligence and analysis of this, led by Chairman Lawrence, along with a host of other people, and they saw this provision. And quite frankly, they didn't have any second thoughts about moving forward to ask for judicial review. And the way they look at that, Mr. Edwards, is kind of like you taught us. This is a democracy. And our state has a check and balance system. And when something's amiss and one or the other branch is doing something, you use that within that check and balance system to make sure that you have full clarity on it. And so essentially, I know people look at this and say, oh, wow, they sued the state. But But we're just exercising democracy at its highest level.
Absolutely. And I repeat again for our listening audience, both domestically and internationally, gentlemen, that if you would have failed, Mr. McDonald, to have exercised a prerogative based on the evidence and an examination of the issues, I would have called for your removal based on malfeasance in office.
Absolutely. So in other words, you taught me better than that, right?
That's right. There you go. I mean, wow. Well, how long do you think it will take leadership to make some kind of commitment? I think that we know, I don't like to talk in the negative as it pertains to the livelihood of any human being, particularly an African-American, but the word is out that you only stand a 50-50 chance of being reappointed to head of the Council on Black Minnesotans as his executive director, and that much of it, 80% of that 50%, is driven by a retaliatory action for you being, I hate to use this word, gentlemen, and to my colleague, Mr. Allen, but that Mr. McDonald had become uppity. And, I've heard that before
that.
Over the years, uppity, the word uppity applied to an African-American who stands up for the rights of his people and at the same time stands for that great parchment of paper called the Constitution, be it the federal Constitution or individual state constitutions and et cetera. And I have to tell you, Mr. McDonald, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I understand the importance, and I said it just a little while ago, the importance of the fragileness of forming alliances and et cetera. But, man, I hate to use this term because we've had a couple of shootings out here just since I've been here involving, unfortunately, the police and individuals. Just last night, two individuals were shot and wounded by the police. But, I would think people would be a little bit quicker on the trigger, gentlemen,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Black Lives Matter and organizations like that, I would think, they're going to be shutting down the marathon this weekend to show their displeasure. I mean, they've shut down Mall of America. They've shut down the light rail and the Viking game. I mean, at what point will they, march on the state capitol and march on the governor's mansion and et cetera, and give us some of that old-time religion that many of us grew up under during the period and the success of the 1960s. Is that something that we no longer can look forward to, gentlemen?
I don't think so. I think the ferocious cry that we hear in the marketplace for racial justice and equity is really the marketplace telling us that something's amiss with the administrative application of equal access and opportunity law.
Okay.
And so the young folks involved with Black Lives Matter, we look at that and we hear that, and we begin to move and examine these and take the court action. We have our first hearing on this this matter in Ramsey County District Court tomorrow at 10 a.m. Anybody want to come down and hear the presentations of one of our best and brightest against one of the AG's office best and brightest? I would encourage them to come. It will be a great, great orator. I think the people that are representing the African Heritage Community, the Council on Black Minnesotans, Black Lives Matter, the NAACP, and the rest of them have really put some good work into being able to demonstrate how this statute do not rise to the muster of constitutional compliance.
All right. I want you to repeat that again. I'll just repeat it tomorrow at 10 a.m. Central Standard Daylight Time in Ramsey County, which contains the site of and seat of government in St. Paul. A hearing will be held. Who is the judge that will be presiding over the hearing tomorrow?
It's my understanding it's a very experienced constitutional Michigan is the name, I believe. That's how it's pronounced.
Uh-huh.
And have some 30 years on the bench. And from what people say, is someone who is a very stickler around constitutional compliance issues. And people say will give a great review to this. But let me say this, though, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen. You know,
mm-hmm.
we recognize, and this is not the only work the council did around this matter, looking at those civil rights laws. We have to look at those because under statute, that's our job. If we didn't do it, we could have been accused of not analyzing the administrative application things and publishing the report.
You would have been accused and removed from malfeasance. I repeat that, which is the strongest specific constitutional action that can be taken against a state official, which you are. You would have been removed for malfeasance. I mean, the homeboys would have jumped on that.
No,
gentleman.
I totally get that. But we went further, and we introduced seven bills last year in the legislature, and had, you know, some good legislative allies that got at the hemorrhaging that is occurring in our community. So that was one to report. We then came back and we looked at the human rights issue itself and introduced our human rights legislation, which would have lift the cap that currently exists on the duties of the human rights director. Human rights director can only carry out 3 of their statutory duties. There are 19 of them. 16 of those are proactive, that get out, build human relations, help cities and municipalities and corporations with being able to do a better job administratively complying with those laws. We wanted them to set up regional offices in Duluth, St. Cloud, and Rochester, where we have growing population centers. We also wanted, and this one we got a lot of pushback on, we wanted to have the state auditor annually audit the administrative
Not the legislative auditor, but the state auditor, who is a constitutional office. Yes, okay.
And independent of the executive, judiciary, and the legislative branch. Have that authority to audit state departments, administrative application of the procurement laws and affirmative action laws,
mm-hmm.
and take corrective action, even if that means punitive. Because today, the way we see it, Mr. Edwards, and I know when we worked on the home and consent decree over in North Minneapolis in the Heritage Park thing, I learned that was really an incredible learning experience for me working with you. And a host of other leaders over there that was doing some incredible work on that federal Section 3 application piece,
mm-hmm.
Which kind of, you know, took me on a journey. What I learned at that time was that Jim Crow today has nestled himself, if you will, inside of these institutions and corporations and government, and have become the affirmative action officers, the EEOC officers, the compliance officers. And because you have a deficient complaint-based system where it takes 4 years for someone who wants help in filing a complaint to have their complaint resolved, most people don't do it. So they know that, and so they can sit back and not administratively comply with the law. And if they don't administratively comply with the law, that means that equal access and opportunity isn't occurring.
Absolutely.
And if it's not occurring, then those resources are going somewhere else. So this auditing turned the spotlight on them to see if they are, in fact, doing it inside those institutions. Let me just say this. Jim Crow today does not necessarily have to be somebody that's white. They can be as black as I am. You know, I'm pretty dark.
Uh-huh.
And so we have to turn the spotlight on them to see if they are or not, not as an I got you thing, but to take corrective action. However, if they're not, and if they have some life inside that position, there are criminal and civil offenses that can
penalties,
be brought
penalties.
Against
Let's just use the word. There are penalties. There
That's
are
right.
civil and criminal penalties. Let me just ask this question, because the public has a right to know what is going on, and if there is a caravan that is going down the same side of the highway, or if, in fact, we, as you said, we have house Negroes, if you will, who appear to be resisting positive action in regards to the survival of the sons and daughters of the African American. I was a little bit taken back in talking to my colleague, Mr. Allen, just a couple weeks ago, that the state Human Rights Department is closing down its St. Cloud facility. There's some reason for that? I mean, are they in that kind of financial strife?
You know, there's an audit reported on the fiscal management of the Human Rights Department that's published online. You may want to pull it up and have the commissioner come out and talk about it. But because he's closer to that, I can't speak to it. We've heard that from our folks on the ground in St. Cloud, and we have our people out there. We have a council committee out there that's doing some incredible work. And, in fact, they had won. Let me say this about human rights. The governor really stepped up on our recommendations and had recommended $2 million to go into the Human Rights Department's budget this year, which would have been the first net increase in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature did not pass that. Our committee out in Rochester got the Ways and Means Committee, which is a Republican, Jim Knobloch, to set aside $180,000 to beef up the operations of the St. Cloud office. That then got beat back by the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and I believe it's Senator Lass.
My very good friend, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, is a member of that Judiciary Committee, and I would just have expected him to filibuster and to have created such chaos procedurally under Robert's rules that it would have been difficult for his Democratic colleagues, because Mr. Allen, what Mr. McDonald is suggesting, that we have it's like the reversal of the poles, the North and South Pole, if you will, which could very well, cause this planet to tumble endlessly forever into the broad universe. I'm beginning to get this uneasy feeling that my good friends in the Democratic Party have turned into something that historically I can well remember. I am old enough as a child. Remember the term Dixiecrats coming out of the 1948 presidential convention and election and et cetera. Of course, Harry Truman, a son of my own, a native son of my own state, the state of Missouri, basically prevailed. Hubert Humphrey became a legend on the civil rights stage. In Philadelphia in 1948, when Hubert Humphrey spoke in terms of the backwardness and at the same time the need to end the rule and influence of the Dixiecrats. But I'm kind of getting the feeling, gentlemen, and I'm not asking you to comment on it, Mr. McDonald. Mr. Allen and I will do that. But I'm kind of getting the feeling that the Dixiecrat, the ghost of the Dixiecrats, of Senator Bilbo and Senator Wilson, Senator Russell and others, has reemerged. I mean, we vote faithfully for the Democratic Party. And my colleague on the right, Mr. Allen, whips me oftentimes, if you will, with regards to almost our undying loyalty to keep the Dixiecrats, in power. And when you tell me that the presiding senior Democratic member of the Judiciary Committee led the fight to overturn a little $180,000 quote-unquote gift to try to keep an operation going in a place called St. Cloud, Minnesota, I'm it frightens me as an older African-American who saw the power and the devastation of Dixiecrats in this country in the 1940s, and then spinning off to become other entities and elements of the Democratic Party. I mean, Hubert Humphrey would turn over in his grave, gentlemen, if he were alive to see this kind of bastardizing, absolute bastardizing, of what at one time was a rich history and tradition and commitment and passion. I'm so saddened, gentlemen. I'm so sad.
Well, the freedom of this freedom Education Act was passed in 1955 in the state of Minnesota. You know, Minnesota made application as a free, didn't want to participate in the Fugitive Slave Act. They mobilized the largest militia to fight in the Civil War.
And that's what Dred Scott was all about, a case that came
that's
right
what,
out of a place called Fort Snelling, Minnesota, the first fortress built by, well, of course, by a man by the name of John C. Calhoun, to protect the white settlers and the free Negroes of the Minnesota Territory. And so Mr. McDonald is following closely the history books, and yours truly as a senior historian is there to reinforce that. But, gentlemen, it just does not take away from the fact that it looks like the presence of Dixiecrats has been reborn and rejuvenated here in our beloved Minnesota.
Well,
let me say that.
Go ahead.
Mr. Allen, from the right, please.
No, I was just going to say, you know, this is really huge, and I'm not seeing this in the Star and Tribune. I'm not seeing this at Fox 9, Channel 5, 11, or 4. And we're going to have to figure out why that is. Now, on the other hand, you have Senator Champion and Senator Hayden and State Representative Rena Moran, you know, supposedly representing our interests, the black community's interests. And that does not seem, Mr. Edwards, as you stated so elegantly, it does not seem that that is the case in this matter at all.
It does not, gentlemen. I can understand all types of different approaches to soften the pain of the lash across the back of the sons and daughters of the African, of the Negro, of the black, and et cetera. But you just can't take away that pain, and you definitely cannot take away statistical and historical facts. And that's the question that I posed to Mr. McDonald some time ago in this conversation. I mean, we can't afford, gentlemen, and I'm not preaching or speaking or talking down to either one of these two gentlemen. We can't afford, as black Minnesota, to be told in 2016, well, also in 2015, you Negroes lost another 14% to 18% to 20% of your economic base. I mean, that's how extinction takes place. That's how people in the tradition of races that have disappeared on the face of this planet and our civilizations no more, that's how that comes about. I mean, man, we cannot afford to take another 14% to 15% hit as it pertains to household income, you know, buying power, economic stability, and et cetera. I mean, I think both of you gentlemen would clearly agree to that. And as, you know, a longtime historian, activist, a man who, as a younger African-American, a young Negro, if you will, was so enthusiastic about the battles that we fought and the change that we made, and I'm just seeing it all go by the wayside. But anyways, Mr. McDonald, anything else for us?
Well,
by the
way,
let me just do this before we let Mr. McDonald go. 347-426-3904, 347-426-3904. Telephone lines of the Donnie Ronnie program are open. If anyone out there has a question or a challenge or a expression of support and appreciation for what Mr. McDonald, Mr. Lawrence, and those members of the council have done, and to encourage the NAACPs and the other organizations of our beloved community to stay the course. And I hope that they are present in the courtroom tomorrow there in Ramsey County. I'm sorry that I will not be back in Minnesota because I think I would have to make that court appearance and hearing tomorrow. But I just pray to the good Lord that the state conference, Mr. McDonald, the NAACP branches of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, St. Cloud, Duluth, and et cetera, reach out to you and sound the trumpet, if you will, that these are desperate times for the future of the sons and daughters of the African. To do less is treasonable.
Let me say this. They are, you know, Ms. Edwards, and I would notify you if that was not happening. They are in But I also want to just point out to people on this issue of wealth loss and unemployment, council was way out in front of this before it even came. We had worked with a demographer and done a cumulative census, statistical analysis, longitudinal analysis to come up with where the state of things were in our community. And we introduced bills to respond to that. We introduced an economic development bill that asked for $30 million to expand the Urban Initiative Fund and its board that oversee it to have a statewide impact, but to target that money in labor surplus communities where you would find our organizations and people residing, using experienced organizations in those communities to help beef up economic activity within those communities. We also asked the legislature, in a partnership with MICA, an Ecumenical Alliance of Faith Institutions, to provide $100 million to an initiative called Housing Opportunity Made Equitable, which would have targeted mortgages, expanded home ownership counseling, and build a capacity of organizations of color to get engaged with the production of affordable housing within within the state of Minnesota. You know, we didn't win on those two bills. In fact, the economic development one didn't get a hearing at all. We did get quite a few sponsors. I don't believe any of our African Heritage legislators signed on to that bill. The housing bill did get some of their support, but we had to go behind the scenes and work with the commissioner of housing to appropriate out of the existing appropriation roughly about $15 to $20 million to target to our community to expand home ownership, which is the foundation for wealth creation and the need for stability in order for our children to live in a stable environment, to, you know, grow to be productive individuals, staying in one school district for a school year so that they have the opportunity to, you know, excel there. But that
to be educationally nurtured, if you will, and crafted to the extent that they obtain the educational opportunities that allegedly are available to all children and young people in this country so that they may compete. But, gentlemen, I think we know that, unfortunately, that's not happening. And there has to be an accounting, gentlemen. There has to be an accounting.
It has to be. And we besides negotiating behind the scenes with the commissioner over there, we got nothing from the legislature on that. We introduced a bill to help our urban farmers. We knew on the federal level that black farmers are not being recognized. At the state level with Department of Ag money, they're not getting loans and grants to build up what is going to be the modern-day approach to getting fresh food and eradicating food deserts in our urban communities. We asked for basically $6 million and some changes to land use policy at the municipal level in order to give them a fair chance to use their creative abilities to start CSAs, community-supported agriculture efforts, to do hydroponics and do greenhouse development. You know, using their great genius that was, you know, followed them from their ancestors to navigate this complex urban environment to produce fresh food and get people access to it. We got urban agriculture legislation in the statute, but we got no money at this point appropriated to help with that. And now we know the federal government is paying black farmers $6 billion because of a similar kind of neglect.
Coming out of Alabama and Georgia, and a philosophy developed by the first lady of this country, Michelle Obama, who 4 years ago really started taking that issue up and talking in terms of what something you just said, the presence, the unacceptable presence of a oasis, really, of barren lands within the African American Negro community in which our people are not being properly nourished and et cetera. So anything else that we need to ask Mr. McDonald, Mr. Allen?
Yes, stand by. We have a caller. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'd like to know the hard numbers of how many African Americans are actually working on the stadium and how many African Americans have contractual services with the new football stadium, the Target Center, the hockey arena in St. Paul, because our taxes went to these buildings to be built. But I have not heard of one entrepreneur that has a business there at those facilities.
Well, let me just correct you, caller, because Mr. Allen and I talked about this. I broke that story about 4 weeks ago. Louis King, the powerful head of the now called Summit OIC, has acquired a concession, a license and concession booth in operation. He's now preparing and in training at the Viking games at the TCF Stadium. And the word has been advanced, and I know this is sensitive because Alex Tittle, who was a longtime associate of Mr. King's, has certainly provided all of the necessary access. And so Mr. King, in July of 2016, as the new Viking Stadium comes online, and in August of 2016, when the Vikings play their first preseason game, and then in September of 2016, when the Vikings have their first regular season game, Louis King will be the kind of the new king of concession business and et cetera, as the only African American in the facility. In fact, we tried to encourage Mr. King to give us a call and to set our minds right, if you will, with regards to his expectation and the lucrative profits that he will be making. And, you know, in fact, he's kind of been in training himself, working out of the food cart that he has, which is actually in the name of his young daughter. And so I have to correct you, caller, there is a presence in the stadium as an entrepreneur. But to your specific question about the numbers, I'll tell you this, the numbers are not even approaching 32%. They're not even approaching 16%. They're not approaching 8%. They're not approaching 4%. You saw what I've just done. There is documentation. We've done it and talked about it, and we've challenged anybody to challenge us on these programs that the numbers are just not there. I gave you a sequential step ladder, if you will, because Mr. McDonald knows that Mr. Lawrence was on with us a year ago, and at one point Mr. Lawrence asked Mr. Kevin Lindsay for the authentic document, which had been properly certified, that there was 32% of the workforce on the Viking Stadium at that particular time. This is a facility that has as many now as 3,500 workers working each and every day to come online. And Mr. Lawrence, in one of his last acts, if you will, joined us on this program and indicated, unfortunately, in April of this year, that he had not been able to obtain that information, caller. So your question is an extremely valid one. It's part of what I think that Mr. McDonald and his group is attempting to do, force the Minnesota Department of Administration to carry out its mandate to cause Mr. Kevin Lindsay to carry out his due diligence and et cetera, and actually cause Ted Mondale, the executive director of the Sports Facility Authority, and Michelle Kelm-Haglin, to actually confront us as the African-American community and say, here are the numbers and the figures. By the way, you asked a question about what other vendors are there beside Mr. King. The only other one is supposedly is Thor Construction.
I got a question, quick question, then. I have to apologize because I've been taking a lot of medication because I'm in rehab because of my heart issue. So if it doesn't come out right, I apologize ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Star and Tribune paper, hasn't there been several articles about the Dinnerman that's in charge of the state transportation contracts for the bus services that go from the suburbs to the city? And they're questioning the fact that he has two big contracts with the state in providing those contracts. Now, what's the difference between what that man doing and then what Mr. King is doing, being the fact that he's been running TCRIC for so long?
You know, I think, caller, that would be an excellent question for the Attorney General, Ms. Lori Swanson, to ask. And I think it would be an excellent opportunity for the governor to indicate to the Commission of Administration that all of that needs to be examined and that there needs to be an answer to your question. I think your question, sir, is an excellent one. And I think it could be easily answered, if you will, by having the top judiciary constitutional officer, the Attorney General, just kind of clarify for us if that's proper conduct. I think that's an excellent question. Sir, do you have anything else, any other questions? I hope we've done the best that we can to answer to some of the questions you put forward.
I'd still like to get the numbers on the Target Center and the Hockey Center because, you know, the Minnesota
Hockey Center, which is known as XL Center, was Mr. McDonald was at one point very active over there in St. Paul. Those figures were basically .0025, if you will. In fact, a African-American, a very courageous African-American black contractor / entrepreneur, actually, didn't he, Mr. McDonald, bring a action in the federal court and actually prevailed over the city of St. Paul, the St. Paul Human Rights Department, and et cetera. There was some settlement, if you will, monetary settlement. He also, this gentleman, did exactly the same thing with regards to Minneapolis. In fact, we have a frequent caller to this program, gentleman known and identified as M, who really knows a lot about that, and there had always been a lot of conversation about this black entrepreneur contractor who really stood up and fought for our people on the XL Center, the Hockey Center, where our beloved Minnesota Wild play. And when you talk in terms of, I think you're really asking about Target Field. You're talking about the baseball stadium. Ed Mondale said in my presence, along with my associate, Mr. Allen, which we have on tape, in a conversation a couple years ago where I confronted Mr. Mondale about the inconsistency of truth on Target Field, Mr. Mondale said, I admit and I agreed it was a sham, but Ron, just give us a chance on the Viking Stadium. Am I correct, Mr. Allen?
You are 1942. Absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards. We met one afternoon down there with that whole board, including the public relations person. And so I never saw any changes. What took my attention, Mr. Edwards, while you were talking, is that back in 2008, there's an audit of the Office of the Legislative Auditor reported that there was a school bus contract management. There was a problem. Find fault. It's along the same with the coach. If I'm not mistaken, bus company here. I'm just trying to peruse it here real quick.
Mm-hmm.
But they found that, you know, there were some big issues there with these contracts with these local bus companies and the state of Minnesota. And so it looks like we might be revisiting that same incident that happened back in 2008.
That would be 7 years ago, and yet the problem still continues. Caller, appreciate you raising this question because there is empirical data, historical information, and et cetera, which confirms
some of the questions that you have asked of us, if you will, and we're just merely two media commentators, if you will. We hold no position of power or authority, had no organizations, would have a hard time getting into court because they would maintain we don't have standing. But you see, Mr. McDonald and the NAACP and others have been, it has been determined that they have legal standing. And, man, that is so important in a democracy, that you have legal standing to bring forward an issue and to have it adjudicated on behalf of, quote-unquote, the bereaved parties, and in this case, the bereaved class. And so I commend Mr. McDonald, Mr. Lawrence, and those members of the council. And I commend a caller such as the gentleman that just called who asked the tough question. You know, I mean, you know, what more can we say other than folks will say that we are attempting to stir a bunch of manure, if you know what I mean. Is Mr. McDonald, are you still with us, and do you have any, if you are, is there any final observation or reflections that you want to share with us?
Yes, people can go to the council's website and review our final legislative report. It's on our website. There's also on the website a human rights and affirmative action analysis. It speaks to some of the issues the gentleman brought up that called in. It does take a look at it. There's a report out there called the MGT America Disparity Report, which is a longitudinal look. It looks over about a 10-year period at the state contracting activities. And one of the things that's disturbing in that is, you know, there hasn't been a year where black people, black vendors, have exceeded 1% exceeded 1% participation in roughly, you know, $3 to $4 billion worth of opportunity. But if you took what would be the benchmark for participation, which is, you know, over that period of time, on the average about 8% participation of $4 billion, that's almost $400 million. Just meeting that minimum target would mean roughly about $400 million of investment into our vendor community, that's our businesses. And the MGT America report points out that there are more than enough available, willing, and able black vendors to be able to not only meet that benchmark but exceed it, but yet and still, with this extraordinary power that the commissioner of the administration has, we have yet to exercise that authority to correct disparities instantaneously. We have not come even close to the kind of fair investment or utilization of our businesses to help stave off this growing wealth loss and unemployment within our community. And it's not like we're asking for something special or some special consideration. That's just what's fair, and it is kind of sad that we have to, on every turn, find ourselves in court asking public officials to do the right thing.
Correct.
And but if we have to, we have to do that, and we're there now, and we're hoping that the results are good because we need to bring some relief to our community, if government's not going to do it voluntarily, then we just have to use the check and balance system of one of the branches to see that it's realized.
Right.
And I hope and I pray that, you know, tomorrow everything gets started on that path, and we begin to turn those numbers around and we grow, continue to grow the assets of our community. But every generation have had to go through this struggle. They may get rid of Ed McDonald, but I can tell them that there is another uppity black person that's out there that's going to stand up for what's right.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McDonald. We appreciate it, and we hope to have you back fairly quickly, right, Mr. Allen, to indicate what courses of action was initiated by the court on tomorrow morning. I'm just sad that I won't be back in Minnesota because I think as I said earlier, for myself personally, I can only speak for myself as an independent operator, if you will, that I would certainly want to be there to see how that plays out. But thank you again, Mr. McDonald. And
yep,
thank
you.
May the spirits of the sons and daughters of the African continue to give you strength, motivation, and hopefully, finally, success. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, number 347-426-3904. We've got about, 15 minutes left.
And, you know, we've had someone holding, Mr. Edwards. We've had
Let's get him on. Let's get him on.
Okay. Let me grab him right here. Mm-hmm. Sir, you're live on the air.
How you brothers doing tonight?
Brother James, we're doing real good. What can we do for you? We got about 14 minutes left. We were kind of waiting on you, but we needed to give specific time to Mr. McDonald. What have you got for us?
Well, that gentleman that just spoke, he, Mr. McDonald, he's doing a very good job. But you know, there is a procurement specialist in town. And he's been here a while, and the procurement specialist met along with the deceased now, perfect grant writer, God bless his soul, Kenneth Nelson. But, you know, like he said, we got these Jim Crow Negroes that's in the way. So what they did was they separated the two as they was getting the money, as usual. And the gentleman that called in shortly thereafter, he was speaking on that Jefferson line. Now, in that report yesterday, they stated very clearly that that could seem to appear to be a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm. To say the least, right, to say the least, yes.
But the gentleman is booty buddies with the governor.
Uh-huh.
And he's been doing the governor for a long time now.
Okay.
Now, getting back to the real meat of the matter, I just can't wait until mid-October because we got us a new knockout baseball hitter coming out of the FBI Bureau. And boy, is he got these Negroes on his hit list.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the FBI office here in the Twin Cities? Is that right? Mm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already got a batting average. He got rid of Ray Nagin in New Orleans. He got rid of Jack Amerhoff, the super lobbyist. I just can't wait till he get here.
Wow, okay. And
now, you
so
remember
he's
a long
appointed,
time.
He's been appointed, so we're clear on this. He's been appointed as the special agent in charge of the Minneapolis, or in this case, Twin City office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Wow, that'll be interesting. Yeah.
You remember some years ago we had a gentleman at the Jim Crow Negro up at the Civil Rights Department said that they can pass those.
What he said was that we can complete a project, meet our stated goals of compliance and affirmative action, and not hire a single black man. That man's name was
Jordan.
Michael Jordan.
Yes. That is correct.
That's
now, when we got we got them kind of Negroes in the house, and we ain't getting no money, and I was shocked that Mr. Louis King then all of a sudden took a back seat because now he's gotten himself a nice little piece of action going on inside the new stadium. Perfect sellout. Perfect sellout. Now, what is he going to do with all that money?
Probably retire to his ancestral home in Jacksonville, Florida. Oops.
Oh, is that something? Well, Mr. Sullivan should roll over in his grave and stick his hand out and choke the shit out of him. Because that was not the kind of Negro that he wanted in charge of that program that he put in place.
Yes, I know. And this kind of personally touches my co-host, Mr. Allen, because his uncles were the driving force, along with a man by the name of the Reverend Stanley King, who has been deceased for a number of years, passed really at an early age. They were the driving force working with troublemakers such as myself in creating the OICs of the Twin Cities 30 years ago.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, it was actually called, in the very beginning, it was called Action Workshop.
Yeah.
In St. Paul. On the corner of Grotto and Marshall.
That's right.
So how does a person like Mr. King come all the way from Florida, ease on up in here, and get himself on the gravy train?
Well, my good friend, Mr. King, kind of came here as a part of a military undertaking. He is a member in good standing of the United States Army, holds the rank of major. Tried to share that with people a decade ago, but, you know, folks, that was a little tough for folk to be able to handle. He was posted here. That's the proper word to be used.
Is we talking about the same Louis King that when the tornado money hit and he was over there meeting secretly and he told the sisters, he threatened the sister, talking about he would pull his pistol out? Don, I think you caught that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I got it on videotape. And he didn't say anything about pistol, but he showed... But he's sure threatened the girl. So,
yeah, I got it on video. Somebody, we're not here to put money in your pocket.
That was an elderly African-American woman who was merely talking in terms of trying. You know, it was a doggone shame because it was right after that Mr. King told Mr. Allen and a white blogger by the name of Ishigari or something like that, that they were both trespassed.
Yeah, Sister Yaziri.
Yeah. They told the sister, though, that they told this African American woman that he wasn't there to give no money to her, and she was merely trying to get laundry money, so that she could wash her clothes and take care of her family. She was staying in a motel there on the other side of the Mississippi River, there in y'all state, in Fridley, gentlemen, and. In fact, the organization that actually reached out to help her as an outgrowth of what the tornado relief group was not doing, that organization went bankrupt. And I think, Mr. Allen, you well remember that, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Yeah, that organization went bankrupt because they were providing assistance and help to our community, and they were not being reimbursed. And the group went, I'm hoping, in fact, that someday we can contact the woman who headed up the organization. She was a Caucasian woman, and have her tell us about where the money really went, whose hands it really went into. Nice piece of money came out of that tornado relief situation. It didn't go to the relief of the citizens, but it certainly, you know, served to enhance, quote unquote, the prosperity and economic growth of you know, some leaders. Oh, well, by the way, that also ties into, I hate to do it because they just hate us. It also ties into the, you know, disappearance and collapse of the African-American History Museum. Oops.
Oops.
Yeah.
Well,
can't account for that $3 million. So you'll never have a history museum. So by and large, Brother James, you not ever be able to really talk about the history of courageous African Americans that did not betray the mission of the sons and daughters of the African. But hey, what the heck? We had some discussion out here on the West Coast in Seattle about the kinds of things that are happening in our community, particularly in the area, gentlemen, of drugs. And who really some of the key kingfishes, oops, are that have been, you know, promoting and moving drugs and et cetera through our community on behalf of the Mexican cartels. I got to tell you, gentlemen, you know, it's you may want to, you know, find asylum in Costa Rica or somewhere where the way things are going.
Okay.
All right, Brother James, anything else for us?
Looks like it's still short takes and bad breaks when it comes to you minorities.
You're right about that.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
We have another caller. Caller, you're
Let's quickly
here,
get him in, Mr. Allen. I think we have 6 minutes left.
Yes, we do.
And go ahead. Go ahead, caller.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are. Yes. Oh, well, gentlemen, I would just thank you for – I know you're at the end of the program. I was really enjoying the last gentleman. He really made some very nice points, pointed out some very nice things. And reason I'm calling late is I had attended a meeting over in St. Paul at the baseball park.
The Saints Park, the beautiful new park built over there in St. Paul, right. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful new park over in St. Paul, and the meeting was about these folks that had, from here, these black folks went to Selma, Alabama, did a pilgrimage.
Okay.
And so what they did is they came back and they were talking to some community people about their pilgrimage to Selma, Alabama.
Okay.
And so I attended it, and it, you know, it was interesting because, you know, I'd say 90% of the people there, for one, were white.
I see. Okay.
And I don't know that anybody, the black community, was really invited to be part of this discussion. I mean, so I wasn't really sure exactly what, but I was curious, so I wanted to go over there, and I hadn't seen the ballpark anyway. But the crux of there, you know, there were some younger folks, you know, from the Twin Cities and, you know, without a lot of historical perspective, and I certainly can't fault them for that. I mean, if you haven't lived through something, you know, you kind of have to go through what you're told, and we're, as we know, we're not told very much by design.
Absolutely.
So, but, you know, it was almost like they went down there like it was a historical artifact. You know, it wasn't, it didn't strike me as something that was real, you know. And I say that because my mother was born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she grew up, you know, with the Bull Connors, with the George Wallaces. She
yes.
grew up in that environment.
Yes.
So
yes.
My experience of that is I mean, that's real. And, I mean, that continues on today. But it was like a perspective. No, we were going back and looking at something that was a long time ago. And I couldn't wrap my head around that.
Yeah, that is so sad. Yes.
There were some respected people there, you know, elders that were there that, you know, I have nothing but the utmost respect for. But one of the things that kind of struck me as a speech was that, well, we hope things are going to get better. Well, we have a belief. We have a hope. But see, my thinking is we got to make things better. You know, we can't hope because, you know, the darkness turns to the next day that everything's better because it's another day. We
yes.
have to take steps. And the plan to do this, in my estimation, is we have to come up with our own plan. And I think that would be effective because I think there's a lot of people of all races, creeds, and colors that are willing to do the right thing if they knew what to do. Our society has gotten so busy with tweedles and twats and all these old kind of things that are out there that are distracting people that even though they want to do good, nobody's really giving them direction. And our leaders seem to want to just pocket what they get.
Yeah.
You know, one of our callers, in fact, our last caller, the gentleman identified as Brother James, said something very interesting about the new head of the FBI's, you know, Twin City office who's arrived in town who has a history of dealing with corruption and fraud. And Brother James, Mr. Alvin and M made a rather interesting statement when he talked in terms of demands. Already got some of these folks on his radar. So
very interesting. Very interesting.
M and United States Attorney Andy Lugar, who is really wasting no time, i.e. Bill Davis and unfortunately his son and et cetera. I don't know. It could be a very uncomfortable remainder of 2015 and 2016 could be one hell of a situation. Yeah. All right, well, Brother M, you got to get into us earlier, but we appreciate you calling in again. And, you know, I kind of reflected on something that I knew that you were very much aware of, and it had to do with a very courageous black businessman whose business is right there on 4th Avenue and 37th in South Minneapolis, who fought the hell out of the city of St. Paul and Minneapolis to get contracts both on the XL Center. He was stabbed in the back by African-American leadership in St. Paul, and almost the same thing happened here. And yet, Mr. Allen, in both cases, Joe prevailed in the federal courts against the bias, the racism, the corruption, and et cetera. I just hope I know he's been in poor health, M, for the last year, so I'm really, really saddened about that. Appreciate you calling in. We'll be looking to hear from you hopefully next week. Mr. Allen, you can wrap it up from there in the Twin Cities. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk with my associates and with many of our callers and et cetera from my position here in the Northwest, if you will.
All right. This is James Brown. We'll be back, man.
All right. Take us home, baby. James Brown. Oh, yeah.